Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting at republicbroadcasting.org. Today is Tuesday, March 28th, 2023. I'm your host, Richard Carey, and this is Beyond the Official Narrative. But I tell you, folks, I was compelled. I almost wanted to open the show with a good, strong welcome to Stormfront. Because today, in addition to a special guest we have on, I'm honored to have with me the co-host of Stormfront, who's going to be acting as my co-host for today. I have none other than Jay Hess, who's here with me as my co-host. Hey, welcome, Jay.
Well, thank you, and good afternoon.
Great to have you. Good afternoon, sir. And I'm looking forward to this show because we have in studio with us a returning special guest to my broadcast. I've had on a couple of platforms even prior to RBN, but we have none other than Mr. Gerhard Lauck of the NSDAP/AO. Hey, welcome, Gerhard.
Hi, how goes it, fellas?
Very good, very good. And Jay here, he's been familiar with you for a long time, and he's been looking forward to making your acquaintance, getting to know you. So Jay, say hello.
Well, hello, Gerhard. And I was telling Richard that I've always wanted to meet you, and looks like we get to meet online today.
Yeah, sounds good.
Absolutely. And Jay, you said you noticed that you and Gerhard are right about the same age as well, right?
Yeah, he's in the class of 53, like myself and Don Black.
All right.
Well, actually, no, officially I'm 29 and holding. I call it the metric aging system. Otherwise, last cold, I have an MBA that changes. I got to stop, and I got to add and subtract, and I got to look what day and month it is in the year type of thing. So I decided I'm just going to stay at 29. I've been 29 for several decades now, so I have it well memorized. It's extra easy to keep in memory because it's the same as my IQ.
All right. Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm just shocked that I've made it this far, and hopefully I can make it a few more years.
Well, there's an old saying, the good die young, so I figure I'll make it to at least 200 or 300.
Yeah, that's what my wife used to tell me. I'm so rotten, I'll live forever.
Yeah. There's been a hiatus from Stormfront, but Jay, you gave some very inspiring updates on Farron's broadcast recently regarding Don. His health has been improving, for one, right?
Oh, yeah. So, I hope that we'll be back on Stormfront in the next few weeks, but we'll see. Don's got a lot of things going on, but I'm just so happy and thankful that his health is, he's pretty much back to normal now for someone who's had a stroke and can barely walk. Yes. But anyway, I want to get into talking with Gerhard. I mean, I know, Gerhard, you've been involved in this movement from a very young age, right?
Well, I became, I've been an instinctual, white racialist national socialist since before conception. But it wasn't until I was about 14 years old and I read Mein Kampf before I became a conscious national socialist. And I started getting active when I was about 17. In 1970, writing articles for various German-American publications and a few in Germany, too, and letters to the editor and this type of thing. That was about 1970. Then in 1972, I founded the NSDAPO, whose job was primarily to produce open national socialist language propaganda material here in the U.S. and ship it over to Germany, and we've been doing that for like half a century now.
That's fantastic. In fact, that's about when I got involved, was in 1970. I was just curious about what National Socialism was all about. And, of course, with a name like Hess, I was always conscious of the injustice that was done to Rudolf Hess. You know, he goes on a peace mission, and he's locked up for life in solitary confinement.
Yes, yes. Well, that's what the Jews do. They commit crimes, and they blame the other people. They blame the victim for being the criminal, vice versa. So.
Well, please continue with the line of questioning, Jay. I was looking forward to you conducting the interview here, actually.
Well, I've been aware of how you've been sending our National Socialist information over to Germany, where it's illegal. This supposedly Germany has been liberated by the Allies, but they're not even allowed to have free elections. I mean, you're not allowed to embrace National Socialism, and. I guess you've served time in German prison for promoting National Socialism. I'm wondering, did you send information about Holocaust revisionism from the Institute for Historical Review?
No, we print our own literature, which is only National Socialist. The National Socialists and the revisionists tend to operate in different spheres. The revisionists want to push their digits looking for historical truth, so they don't want to be aligned ideologically to a group as radical as us, which I can understand from a tactical standpoint. We're openly pro-National Socialists. For us, the historical revisionism, we think it's good stuff, but it's not our primary thrust.
Yeah, that was one of my big focuses back in the early 70s was Holocaust revisionism, and I was a big supporter of the Institute for Historical Review. They used to produce very professional pamphlets, and I used to distribute them on college campus and wherever else I could. I remember Beata Klarsfeld came to Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Geez, I can't even remember what year it was, but myself and some of the members of my local group, we went out and we put out the Institute for Historical Review brochures plus stickers from the various like the American Nazi Party, which was one thing I wanted to ask you was about the American Nazi. American Nazi Party in Chicago. I think you had something to do with revealing that Frank Collin was a Jew. Is that correct?
Well, the American Nazi Party was founded by Rockwell in 1959. He was assassinated, of course, in 1967. And around that time, they're in the process of changing the name to the National Socialist White People's Party. Then afterwards, during the Kale regime, there were several groups that broke off and became independent. And we want more of the independence. The problem with the Kale's outfit that we had is when we went to them to walk with them, they said, well, in order to discuss walking with you, you have to meet the following conditions. And these conditions included turning over our mailing list, recognizing only one group, refusing to walk with groups not officially recognized. The terms are simply unacceptable. So we got stuck. We started working with some of the independent groups, and then, of course, because you work with the independent groups, you consider an enemy of the party. So there was a lot of conflict and rivalry between the various factions back in the 70s. Now, that's ancient history now, so we don't want to...
Yeah, I don't want
to respect those views. I'm on friendly terms with people on both factions now, but that was the climate back.
I remember that clearly, and I remember I had a lot of respect for Matt Kale, but as you mentioned, he was... I don't know what the word is, kind of unique and strict and if you wanted to be a member of his new order, you had to toe his line. And I was also good friends with Carl Allen, who was the deputy commander of Rockwell's party. But somehow Carl had a falling out with Rockwell, and Kale became commander. But anyway, I think we're going way too far back, I think.
It's interesting for me, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners. So yeah, wherever you guys gentlemen want to take things. But
either way, it's fine with me. I mean, it's part of the movement history, but it should be presented in a basically a neutral, respectful way instead of saying, you know, one faction were all angels and the other faction were all demons. It's tragic that there was so much disunity. And by the end of the 70s, basically both the Kale faction and the anti-Kale faction, Mollis, fell apart. And it was really sad that the people who remained active from the two factions couldn't just, you know, shake hands and come back together and walk together. But there was just different mentalities in those days. So it was harder to do, unfortunately.
Yeah, I feel very lucky that I moved to Tallahassee in, I think, 2006. And Carl Allen lived in Tallahassee. And he had a storage unit with all the files from the American Nazi Party. And I used to, like, marvel at all the files in there. And I remember going over the membership applications. For instance, you Rockwell required that you write a little essay of why you want to join the American Nazi Party. And I remember reading some of those and thinking, like, these were very well thought out, these people that were applying for the American Nazi Party. In fact, I mean, Carl Allen himself, he graduated from Florida State University with a bachelor's degree, and he was in the Korean War as a lieutenant. And when he went to Harvard and got his MBA at Harvard, and then joined the American Nazi Party. So Carl had a lot to do with keeping their finances straight, even though there wasn't really much of much finances to keep straight.
Now, what's amusing is when they try to portray National Socialists as being just a bunch of mindless hate monger thugs, I basically find that amusing, even though it's obviously incorrect. Yeah. Most of the people I walk with close to on almost daily basis are college graduates with STEM degrees. They're not illiterate hate mongers, or, you know, they're not nearly as crude. But of course, they can always find a few people who are on the crude side and say this is what they look like. And they promote a stereotype, and the problem is some people are attracted by the stereotype, so they emulate the stereotype and perpetuates the stereotype, even though it's not really what most of us are like.
And of course, another example is Dr. William Pierce, who was a tenured professor of physics, and he joined with Rockwell.
Yes, there are several examples like that. And one of the groups I was working with for a while are the top three officers of all of us nominees.
Yeah, I'm moving to another room. I've got a parrot that's, I hope it's not.
I don't have a parrot, but I have a friend that has a parrot. They says, that sounds like a parrot in the background. Okay, what kind of parrot have you got?
That's exactly what it is, a parrot. It's springtime, and she's going nuts. So I'm in another room now.
What kind of parrot have you got, Gerhard asked?
To be honest, I don't know, because it's not my parrot. It's the woman. What is it? Indian wing mix.
Okay. I'm not familiar with that one. A friend of mine has a blue and gold military mix, which is in its 30s, and I say it's the honorary head of the Luftwaffe for the NSDAPO, because it's obviously got wings. So,
yeah.
So you were a member, Gerhard, of the American Nazi Party in your early days. Is that correct?
No, I was not. We were a separate organization. Now, we were allied closely for several years in the 70s with the NSPA in Chicago, which was headed by Frank Collin. And then later that fell apart for reasons that are kind of embarrassing. But that was a very effective local. It was a very effective local agitation group. The printed literature was not very effective, but when we came in, we took over the publishing administration, so they finally had a good tabloid paper for a few years before they finally collapsed. I think one of the problems they have with some of these groups is you get the Peter principle, and there's an old saying. One of the old Rockwell guys, who I know, I don't want to mention his name on the phone, he's still alive. I don't know if he wants to be publicly elder, but he said the problem you have is the people who can do something don't want to, and the people who want to can't do it. So a lot of the most talented people are really not in a position to quit their job, move to headquarters, and work, you know, 9 to 5 full-time for the party. They got families and jobs and careers. And some of the people who do go full-time, they're really good guys when they're young, but sometimes their ability is either limited, or they become a little bit jaded, or they become profiteers, or they seem to become a little bit too narrowly focused. Like their group is the one and only two group, and everybody else is at best an insignificant splinter group, and at worst is an anti-party element. I don't know if this. I don't think that attitude exists so much today, but that was pretty. That was wildly so common back in the 70s. One of my friends in Germany said anybody who has like six members on him claims he's the new NSDAP, and he's the new Adolf Hitler type of phenomenon. The mini Führers, we used to call them sometimes in Germany.
Yeah, I think we used to call it the phone booth Führer syndrome.
It's funny because one of the Jews, supposedly it was the ADI, some of the Jewish groups called me the Farm Belt Führer, which is funny because for the Jews, the Farm Belt, like Aryan peasants, they look down on us. But for Aryans, we like the Farm Belt. I mean, the country people are the backbone, the peasantry, the farmers, whatever, the backbone of a society. So what they meant as it was an insult was actually a compliment. And there was another funny experience I had when I was working for a Jewish company. One of the executives, actually the owner of the company, was impressed by something I did. So he said that I had a Yiddish occult. In other words, I had a Jewish mind, but I knew that when a Jew says that to a Gentile, that is intended as a compliment, and I took it that way, but it's kind of funny because in our ex, if you said someone had a Jewish mind, of course, it'd be considered an insult. So one man's compliment is another man's insult.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, okay, but I do recall from the past, Gerhard, you mentioning you were quite young, of course, when Rockwell was still alive before his assassination, and as you mentioned earlier today, during the Matt Cale regime era, the restrictions on networking with others and everything, other groups. It's
one of the conditions they had is you had to join the World Union. You had to recognize Cale as the global head, and you could only recognize one group per country. And you could only work with the groups that you recognize. So it happened that some group would go over there to play up the chaos, they get recognized and lorded over other people, but they only represented a very tiny percentage of the movement in that country and not necessarily the best. Now, one of the things that got the Germans a little bit ticked off is the idea that any American is going to claim that he's the head of the global movement is insane. No self-respecting European is going to respect that, and they shouldn't respect that because the fact is that the movement in Europe has always been much stronger than it is in the United States. However, in Europe, it's outlawed. So in America, it's legal. You can go up with 20 guys in a uniform and say, look, this is the biggest demonstration in the world or something. But it's really not. Because the other guys, there were demonstrations in Germany in the 80s and 90s, or in the late 80s, with 5,000 people. Now, they couldn't fly the swastika flag in that. But the memorial marches were organized by hardcore national socialists. They were well-known as national socialists. So groups that can mobilize 5,000 people is not recognized by a group that can mobilize maybe at best 50 or 100 people.
Yeah, I've noticed that sometimes the restrictions that have been imposed in Europe have actually helped make them more disciplined and focused.
Yes, and there's actually less infighting in Europe because when you're being thrown in jail by the political police, you're less likely to fight with a guy, even if it is a different group, because you got more serious things to do. Like when you're in a foxhole, the guy next to you, he's your comrade. You don't care whether he's, you know,
yeah,
about anything else. We've done that type of thing back in the 70s, but the AO takes a totally different approach. We're very informal. We network. We don't care what faction you're walking with, or even ideologically, if you're 100% in alignment with us or not. The key factor right now is the survival of Western civilization, our various nationalities, and the right race. If someone's in basic agreement, yeah, these things are under attack, let's defend them, then they're on our side. They may not even be NS, but they're allies of.
All very insightful. I hear the music, gentlemen. So, yeah, we'll be right back after this short break. Stick around, folks. In a world that keeps on pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground. And I won't back down.
Which will conclusively prove George Soros' role in orchestrating the plandemic. But first, dear patriots, the truth train has brought us a conspiracy in our own backyard. Now, you may think you know the story.
Now, it's like I always say, there's a whole lot of bullshit out there. So I'd like to give Soros, Pelosi, the Zionists, the Mexican, the snowflakes, and Oklahoma.
Okay. stay strong, truth tellers. Truth tellers. Stay strong. Stay strong.
Listening to RBN in defense of the Republic.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop-and lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop-and lift?
Our ease-off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the ease-off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my ease-off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Standing 6'4", weighing in 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the Republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the Republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. Fuck you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
One day we will put it all behind. We'll say that was just another time. We'll say that was just another day on earth. We'll say that was just another time. One day
and we are back, folks, beyond the official narrative here on Republic Broadcasting. Richard Carey here with my co-host for today, Jay Hess, the co-host of Stormfront. And together we have as our guest, Gerhard Lauck of the NSDAP/AO and Third Reich Books. I should add, a lot of excellent reprints, you know, just like the originals of a lot of excellent, books that were available back in the 30s. And, you know, a lot of excellent information to help wake people up as the way it was used back then. And I guess part of this discussion, gentlemen, is comparing how organizations were in the past earlier years until now, even the way things were done with propaganda, which people today seem to think, just like eugenics, can only be bad or untruthful and can never be positive and truthful. But, of course, it is a neutral term. So when Gerhard uses the term propaganda, to some listeners who might not realize, he's using it in a positive way, which, I mean, they misquote Goebbels a lot of times. Where he's using the word, and he's talking about a truthful information to get people to embrace National Socialism and how much it is aligned with nature and the natural order of things, really.
I'd like to just point out one thing quickly, that Dr. Goebbels never lied to the German people. He always told them exactly what was going on when things were bad or good.
That's an excellent point.
the point is not to lie, you get tangled up in lies. Now, of course, you can stress the positive and downplay the negative and put kind of a spin on things, but you don't want to lie to people. That just doesn't work in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I wanted to ask you about what it was like in a German prison.
Well, it's not as bad because they're mostly white. It's a more civilized country in some regards. In America, it's like there's a stigma. You're in prison, you're an evil person, you did something wrong. Or in Europe, there's so many. In Europe, it's easy to go to prison in America because there's more laws. But once you're in there, it's not as bad as it is in the American prisons. In fact, one of the German policemen told me a funny story. This is a German policeman, mind you, tell me. There's an old saying that every good German has to do certain things. He has to write a book, build a house, father a child, and be arrested at least once. Now, this is a German policeman telling him to be a good German, he has to be arrested at least once, because there's so many laws that he get a follow of, and also, of course, there's the political repression type of thing, too, so it doesn't have quite the stigma. Also, when I was in there, I was fairly well-known, and I got a lot of mail, so if something had happened to me in while I was in there, people would have figured it was an assassination, there'd be a lot of flack on that, so I was not, mistreated while I was in there. Not much, anyways.
I guess one of the reasons I asked is I know if I were to go into any country in Germany, I'd be extradited to Germany to serve I don't know how long, but because I've been sending our information, what propaganda over to Germany for years, and so I'm hesitant. I've only been to Germany once. It was back in 1974. And back when it was, I think, pretty easy, they didn't really keep track of anybody back in those days. But I know if I were to go to anywhere in Europe, I think I'd be immediately extradited to Germany.
All I know is everything's computerized, so you get on a list. Now, the Germans and the French believe that even having a website in America falls under their jurisdiction because it's accessible in Germany. So you could have something on a website in America in English that's totally legal here, but one of the European governments says, hey, wait a minute, this is accessible in our country. We don't like it, so we're going to issue an international arrest warrant. They don't tell you that. You get off a plane someplace, and the next thing you know, you're arrested, and then you have to fight.
Exactly.
It's much more dangerous today, both in terms of the computerization and how aggressive they are and the cooperation. And I was told in the old days, I mean, before my time, there was a time when criminals would live in one country and then they go to the next door country, commit crimes, and go back to their country, but not commit any crimes in their country, and they wouldn't even have to worry about being extradited because the countries didn't really cooperate that much, depending upon the countries and the crimes in question. I don't know how to do that. It seems plausible maybe in the 50s or something like that. But now with the European Union, it's much easier for them to extradite. With me, they had to go all the way to the Danish Supreme Court to get me extradited. Today, they wouldn't have to go through all those steps to get me if they wanted to.
Well, I did a prank or a stunt I can't even remember when. When Louis Freeh was head of the FBI,
Mid-90s, I remember that. In a period where
Went over and met with, I think, Helmut Kohl and promised that he would extradite Americans who were sending this neo-Nazi propaganda to Germany. He would extradite them to Germany. So I sent a packet to a German prosecutor in Hamburg, and I sent a copy of it to Louis Freeh, and I requested to have the honor of being the first American extradited to Germany.
Well, what they did with me, when I was told,
Oh, yeah, I heard well, please keep that thought, and we could hear that from you after the break, Gerhard. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Stick around.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available, and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To read more about this amazing breakthrough and to order your terahertz frequency wand, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
And we are back, folks, beyond the official narrative. You're on Republic Broadcasting. Richard Carey here with co-host for today, Jay Hess of Stormfront. And we also have, as our special guest, Mr. Gerhard Lauck of the NSDAP/AO and Third Reich Books. Be sure to check out Third Reich Books, amazing reprints of the original pamphlets going back to the 1930s in their original
technically form. Most of them are not reprints. Most of them are translations from German English by me.
Okay,
Most of them are translations from the originals.
Well, thank you for clarifying it. And you were about to respond to Jay, one of your experiences in a German prison, Gerhard?
About Benjamin Free was the first FBI director to visit Germany. And when he got off the plane, he was deceived by government officials asking him to stop the flow from us. And I found out about that because one of the reporters who was there contacted me later on for an interview. So that was a reporter from the NME who's telling me that story, which is kind of interesting. Because, of course, Benjamin Free, he didn't even know about us because in America...
It was Lewis Free.
Right?
Lewis Free.
Louisville, not Benjamin. Okay, thank you for the correction. Yeah, so he was, he didn't know who we were, because in America it's totally legal. We're not that powerful politically, but in Germany, we're illegal, and it's a, you know, sensitive issue there. So then they formed a task group specifically to combat the NSDAPO. There was weekly communication between the head of the German FBI and the American FBI and the heads of the intelligence agencies in both the United States and in Germany. And we found about that during the time, but during my court case, I had over 4,000 pages, my files, and there's documentation in there with correspondence between various German government ministries, the office of the chancellor, the head of the German political police, the head of the German CIA version, Bundesnachrichtendienst, and some of the counterparts in America. So it was very interesting reading this documentation of how serious they took us and what extreme lengths they went to try to close us down. They never did succeed in closing us down. I was arrested in Denmark, fought extradition to the Danish Supreme Court, lost, was extradited to Germany, but the operation kept going the entire time. So they failed in that regard.
Well, I know you did one hell of a good job over there getting information out. And
go ahead, Jay.
You know, what I did was basically a stunt or a prank. You know, because I knew that there's no way an American citizen could be extradited to Germany for a crime that isn't a crime in America.
Well, what they do is they accuse you of all sorts of false things. I was accused in writing of international terrorism and official German documents going to official American offices. So we were concerned that they were going to use us as an excuse to launch SWAT team raids on us and get in shootouts and this type of thing, which was a very real threat we considered back in the 1990s, which is why I went to Denmark, was basically to divert attention away. And we succeeded in that. We got to divert attention from the United States over to Europe, and then we did not have the SWAT raids. Because in those days, there's a lot of stuff going on. There were physical attacks, bombings. I survived assassination attempts back in those days, too. So we took those things very seriously. If someone breaks down your door in the middle of the night, you don't think it's the police coming to arrest me. You presume it's an assassination attempt, and you grab a gun. Well, once the bullets start flying, it doesn't make any difference if the police are not. I mean, if you knew they're police, you wouldn't, you know, shoot a cop. But they don't tell you that. You know, they don't give you the benefit of the doubt, especially when you're accused of terrorism. Now, it's interesting. There were three legal aid requests coming from the German government to the American government. The first one just said that, you know, propaganda, and the Americans says, well, we got freedom of speech, you know. And then the Americans and the Germans met and decided, the Americans basically told the Germans, you got to accuse them of something else so we can do something. So then they accused me of violence, and it was a funny thing there is one of the German ministers of Interior Justice asked the police to compile a report, and there was a 60-page report compiled by the German police where they told their superiors that there's no evidence linking me to violent activity in Germany. So what does the German government do? They tell the American government the exact opposite, that there is evidence linking me to violence. However, even that wasn't enough to get the Americans to go against me. So then I was accused of international terrorism. And at one point, I saw a document from Interpol where it claimed I was under investigation for gun running and money laundering in the state of Utah. I'd never been to Utah. And they list, I think, five countries where I was supposedly engaged in international terrorism, and some of those are countries I had never set foot in my entire life. So they make up all this ridiculous stuff to give the other guy an excuse to do something, even though both guys know it's a lie.
Wow, this is really fascinating. I didn't know some of this, and I didn't realize how much you had almost the life of a spy, with those sort of experiences, Gerhard, and just living in those conditions. Ready with the gun, you know, at night, and if you have a knock at the door, and assuming assassination,
and
you've survived.
Breaks down, the door breaks, and breaks still coming in. I mean, yeah. But it was a different time. There was a lot of publicity. There was more violence. There was more tension. And as the only cell needs, the movement wasn't taken as seriously. So you go to jail for maybe 6 months or something. Now you go to jail for something much smaller if you get years in prison. Free speech things. You had 2-3 years of prison in Germany. Now the interesting thing is while the prison sentences were escalating, some of the activists figured, well, heck, if I can go to prison for a nonviolent propaganda act, maybe I should get guns or something like that. It's almost like saying how Hitler's worse than killing somebody. In fact, another true story, while I was in what I call my luxury hotel over there, one of the other guests had machine gunned a guy and crippled him for life, and he got 2 years in prison for that. I got 4 years for publishing a newspaper, and this guy who crippled a guy with a machine gun got 2 years.
Yeah, that's typical. I mean, look at what happened to, the guy who did the Stormer,
Julius Streicher.
He was murdered at Nuremberg, hung for publishing his paper.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It shows the Jewish mentality.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I'm also curious what else both of you really would say about how things have changed in both the strategies for activism and also, well, the prosecution with the change now, so much shift toward technology and the internet. And on a side note, I mean, Jay, I forget if you say you were at one point associated with the National Socialist White People's Party or American Nazi Party before that. But I mean, I know now you're with the National Alliance, and actually you're also a part of the cosmotheism as well.
I was member number 88 in the National Alliance. At one point, I think I was looking at the records. The National Alliance had over the years 80,000 members. Now, of course, a lot of those like would maybe sign up, give a month's dues, and you'd never hear from them again. And of course, there was like the enemy infiltrators. But 80,000 over the decades we had in the National Alliance.
And you were member number 88?
Yeah, member number 88.
Wow. What street cred that is, right?
Amazing. Yeah.
And I mean, just for people to understand what a lot of the smuggling of propaganda was back in the day. I mean, Gerhard, I've heard a lot of good interviews you've done with Kyle Hunt of Renegade Tribune / Renegade Broadcasting prior to my starting to interview with you on Revision Media, my platform, and then here on RBN. But I remember there were a lot of good discussions you had with Kyle Hunt as well. And you talked about a lot of what was smuggled really and effective was something as simple as swastika stickers, for example, in the early days. Isn't that correct?
Well, the swastika sticker was extremely effective because it was small but visible, and you could move large quantities. If you take it was basically one-tenth of a sheet of paper. So if you think of like a case of paper with 5,000 sheets, that's 50,000 swastika stickers. We made those by the millions. We purposely designed that so it was big enough that if you put it on a telephone pole in a residential area and an automobile drove by at 20 miles or 25 miles an hour and they glanced at it, they could see the swastika. So it's a little bit bigger than the American ones, but it's small enough that you can actually hold it in your hand and totally have it hidden. So you can have it in your hand, bring it up to your face, lick the back of it because they were gummed, and put it back down by a pants leg or something, kind of look around you when no one's looking, and put it up on an object and rub it and then leave. It was a very effective, it was a primary offensive propaganda weapon. Now, we also had posters in that, but the posters are a little bit hard to put up, especially if you're a lone wolf. Nonetheless, some of the guys who had larger groups, they would go into a city with teams, and they'd have one guy with a bucket of glue and one guy with the posters, and then they have people on each end of the street in the walkie-talkies watching for the police, and they put up hundreds of these on streets in major cities, and that got huge publicity. That would be like front-page publicity the next day in the daily paper.
Yeah, that used to be one of my favorite things to do. I put up so many of those little lickable swastika stickers.
Yeah, they're extremely effective.
Well, Jay, what else would you like to ask Gerhard to steer the discussion?
Okay, boy, let me think. There's so much I can't think of anything.
I mean, the differences now and then with the organizations and the material, you know, propaganda that you try to awaken people with is part of it. But I mean, something along those lines.
I know what I'd like to ask. What Gerhard's opinion of the National Alliance is.
Well, I mean, the National Alliance and the Pierce was the premier organization, you know, in the United States. I'm not as familiar with the organizations and now. I mean, I know they exist, but I don't know enough about the activities to really you know, compare and measure them. I mean, you've got the National Alliance, which is more NS-oriented and a little bit more intellectual, and you have the NSM with the street activism and with the open NS, and you've got the Goyim Defense League, which is concentrating on the Jewish issue, all the issues, so they have different... my general act is that different groups have different approaches, and every approach has pros and cons, you know, advantages and disadvantages. So we should view each other as allies and help each other where we can, and where we can't help each other, I'll just walk parallel but not get in each other's way and attack each other, argue, oh, my group's better or my approach is better. They got pros and cons. I tell young people when I talk to them, ask themselves what they're willing and able to do, and then where they fit well with organization A or organization B or organization C, a lone wolf or whatever type of thing.
Yeah, I agree completely. Like, for instance, I was mentioning Matt Cale's organization. That just didn't feel like the right fit for me. And the National Alliance did. I mean, I just thought, I mean, Dr. Pierce gave me so much. He was like my mentor. He encouraged me to get my Bachelor of Science degree. And before that, he suggested I join the Army. So Dr. Pierce was like a father to me.
Wow! I didn't know all that either. So no, this is very interesting. The whole interview. Go ahead, Gerhard.
Well, remember, 88, you had to be pretty old, because if I remember, like, when I was in college, either college or just out of college, the National Alliance already existed. It was originally, I think, there was the Youth for Wallace, and then they formed the new group, National Alliance, and I think it was Patrick T. Ford type. So there's one faction led by some Patrick fella, and then there's another one led by Pierce, and of course, Pierce became the real runner, you know, fairly quickly. But if I remember right, that was in the early 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, I think, 1970, Dr. Pierce founded the National Youth Alliance.
Okay, yeah, and, I remember that. National Youth Alliance, yeah.
And I think I joined sometime around 74, and that was when it had become just the National Alliance.
Okay, yeah, I had forgotten about the stuff, because it goes back a long time. I'd forgotten about the intermediate step of National Youth Alliance and National Alliance. But you mentioned number 88. I remember when I was in college getting literature from Pierce's outfit that I think it was a little bit older book. You got active, but he joined his group in 74, then okay, early 70s, yeah. Now, there's differences also is that in the 1960s and 70s, America had more racial consciousness. And a lot of the propaganda themes that you'd see in the rock roll and Cale area that was effective then is simply not going to be effective now. It's a little bit too crude by today's standards.
I kind of admired what Cale was doing. He was basically deifying Hitler, like Hitler was like the new god. I thought that was kind of cool, but I didn't think it was that practical.
Yeah, there was this one lady who's... I'm sorry, go ahead, Gerhard.
You got to keep... Even Hitler said you got to keep politics and religion separate. The people I walk with Christians, pagans, atheists, agnostics, deists. I mean, I don't know what that... Buddhists, Hindus, conservative Christians, Catholics, we work with a very wide... And Christian identity, we work with a very wide... variety of people. And I remember talking to one of the officers under Rockwell who mentioned that he was basically, at one point, he was basically told he's no longer welcomed because he's a Christian. Well, America's a predominantly Christian country. You're not going to become a mass movement if you denounce the major religion in the country, regardless of whether you personally, you know, agree or not. I believe Rock referred himself as an agnostic, but he didn't attack Christianity. In fact, I remember one of his old posters. He had the Christian. He had the symbol of my race, the symbol of my country, and the symbol of my religion. So he had the American flag for his country, he had the swastika as the flag of the race, and he had the Christian cross as the religion of the United States at the time. So you want to appeal to all three of these people, the groups that at the very least don't alienate them, for Pete's sakes. But
yeah, as I recall, Rockwell did identify as a Christian, but also I think he was getting into paganism. And I was fortunate to know three of the old original American Nazi Party members. Carl Allen, who was deputy commander, and Harry Blair and Bernie Davids. And poor Bernie Davids. Everybody used to think he was a Jew when he'd say his name.
Well, the interesting part with the religions, too, and a lot of the Europeans look upon the paganism as simply part of their cultural heritage, not as a theological thing. Now, my wife was deceased. She was Lithuanian. And the Lithuanians, they were a Catholic nation, but they also embraced a lot of elements of the pagan customs as part of the ethnic cultural heritage, and they didn't see any contradiction between Catholicism and the paganism, because there were two different aspects. One was more religious and was more cultural, historical type of thing. Now, in America, that's a little bit hard to do because they're sometimes in a little bit more strict on some of these theological things. But religion, there's always saying that politics and religion are sensitive subjects, and I don't keep my mouth shut on politics, obviously, so I try to keep my mouth shut on religion, at least when I talk about it, being in a consolatory thing like we're all on the same side. When I talk about local, you know, I live in a small rural area now, which is pretty, you know, conservative and Christian. And I tell people the key issues is the enemy hates America, they hate Western civilization, they hate the white race. So if you like those few things, you're on the same side, we've got to defend them against a common enemy. I don't try to pin them over the head with Mein Kampf or slam a swastika in their face. Now, if they're interested in this, I will talk to them about it. I don't hide it or anything like that. But I try to find common ground and make them an ally. And once they're an ally, then we can talk about the other things without risking alienating each other.
I personally believe that, you know, religion, it really doesn't matter to me what religion somebody happens to have or not have. I happen to believe in the cosmotheism thing, which is basically a religion based upon a scientific understanding of nature. That I can agree with, but I wouldn't want to, you know, force anyone to abandon whatever philosophy gives them strength.
Yes, I mean, we don't want to criticize, you know, any of our, just the way Gerhard described the strategy here today, I think is brilliant. I don't see how it could be said any better, Gerhard. But I mean,
yeah, pointless to try to argue about religion. We're political fighters. We're not religious fighters.
If you want to be a religious reformer, do that, but don't try to be a political reformer and a religious reformer at the same time. If you want to
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it does make it inconvenient, though, I had a host on my Revision Media, Rosemary McLeod, and she's a member of New Order. Now, of course, it went from American Nazi Party to National Socialist White People's Party to New Order. It became a religion when it became New Order. And she's had Martin Kerr on, you know, after Matt Cale. It was George Lincoln Rockwell, for the listener's knowledge. George Lincoln Rockwell, then Matt Cale, then Martin Kerr, the current head, and it's New Order now, which is it became a religion with the name change.
It's kind of confusing, too, because it's more of the New Order. You got the New Order, his group, but you got our newspaper, the New Order, which actually predates his organization by 2 years. And the concept of a New Order goes back to the Fourth Reich, too, with the National Socialist Order in Europe. So the names become a little bit confusing at some point.
Matt Cale was still alive when the name was changed and it became a religion, correct? Yes, before Martin took over. So it's not like the current head did all this changing.
I can remember 30, 40 years ago, Matt Cale was promoting the New Order as a religion, worship.
In the early 80s, they changed that, I think, in 82, 83, sometime in the early 80s.
It's hard to keep track of the years, but it was sometime back then.
Yeah, it was just in the early 80s sometimes. I remember that, yeah.
Well, I love everything you've been describing about the strategies, which are best for working with other groups to whatever extent you have mutual interests. You described it so brilliantly, Gerhard. The only thing left with the few minutes we have remaining would be with the Internet and technology these days. What you have to say on that, please?
Well, right now, one of our divisions is web hosting. We host hundreds of websites, and we specialize in political dissident websites, and, of course, primarily, you know, white nationalist and national socialist websites. Initially, it was primarily in Europe because there's more oppression there, but in America, as there's more oppression, we're getting more even relatively moderate to conservatives coming over to us because they get blackballed by the left. Now, that website is sinzofrei.com. The other website with the books is third-reich-books.com. And then our political website is nsdapao.info. So if you go to the last site, the nsdapao.info, there's links on that website to our web hosting division and to our book publishing division. So if someone wants to find us, they can do it that way.
Jay, any remaining questions? Oh, go ahead, Gerhard.
One of the problems is the Internet's a good tool, but some people rely upon too much on the Internet. The most effective propaganda or persuasion, whatever you want to use, is as a direct, face-to-face, one-on-one conversation with people. And you find common ground with them, get in a rapport, see where they agree. If there's points you disagree, kind of avoid those. Direct face-to-face is much more effective. Here where I live, a lot of people know who I am politically, and there are people in the government, law enforcement, Christian ministers that know full well I'm National Socialist, and we're on very friendly terms. It's not a problem at all. Because, again, I stress, you got the enemies of America. They're the enemy on the far left. They hate America. They hate Western civilization. They hate the right ways. They're destroying our people. We have the people, the patriots, who want to stop that. We have to work together to stop that. We don't have to argue about exact political nuances or economic theories or religious beliefs type of thing. And this general approach has been very effective for me locally when I deal with people, and I think it's can be effective for a lot of other people. Most people are not able to come out really hardcore white nationalist and national socialist because of jobs and family and being out in the docks and type of thing. But they can nudge people in the right direction if they develop the techniques and do this systematically, and they get a lot done. And they don't necessarily have to join an organization or even contact an organization to do that.
I agree completely. Face-to-face activism is the best.
Well, this has been great. We're just about out of time. I'll have to have you gentlemen together again for a show if you'd like. And Gerhard, yeah, it was a pleasure. And anything else you wanted to add, Jay?
No, I'm just I'm so happy I finally got to meet Gerhard.
Fantastic. All right. Well, we'll have to keep that that going, and then Gerhard, we'll have to make sure I get a bit more regular again with your appearances on my show.
Okay. Well, I'm always happy to talk to friends.
Brilliant. That sounds great. And all right. Well, have a great week. Both of you gentlemen, it was an honor and pleasure. An excellent show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Well, please support the station to keep all of this uncensored content, which requires listener support, to continue. And right now we've had the main mixer go down, last Thursday. We've been working with chewing gum and baling wire, I think Mr. Whitener told me is the proper way to describe to keep everything going. So please, folks, this is a really crucial time to help out. Go to the donate button at republicbroadcasting.org and please support to keep all of this free speech alive. And we will speak again soon. Transcend the construct. Regards.
I was right 30 years ago when warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart.
buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit RepublicBroadcasting.org today, because you can handle the truth.